And welcome to another episode of SG Voice Talks 2, brought to you by Sustainable Growth Voice. In these fortnightly episodes, the SG Voice team hears from the people and companies that are driving the sustainable transition and disrupting the status quo. I'm Heather Dinwiddie, reporter at SG Voice, and this week I'm joined by Arun Pak and Dr. Johnny Drain, co-founders of Win-Win Food Labs. So hi both, and thanks again for taking the time. I thought I'd dive in by asking, sort of in your own words, what problem was your company created to solve?
First of all, Heather, thanks for having us on the show. You know, the initial problem that Win-Win set out to solve was actually, you know, there's a lot of excess food in the world, and there's specifically a lot of food that's wasted. So Win-Win originally stood for waste not, want not. And so that's our premise is, you know, how do we become more sustainable within the food ecosystem? And how do we actually valorize all the elements that are created, and how do we enjoy them in a delicious manner? You know, we've slightly evolved from that concept, but I think Win-Win, it's very much within our DNA that we valorize delicious ingredients, and then we make sure that we eat everything on our plate.
And how did you arrive at your end product, or I don't want to say end product, but how did you arrive at where you are now?
Yeah, so, you know, I'd been doing a lot of work in this sphere of food waste and how do you, you know, valorize things. And essentially what we're saying there is that lots of the stuff that gets thrown away, and it's something like 30 to 50% of comestible food mass globally gets thrown away. And this is in against the backdrop of like 800 million people globally being chronically undernourished. So we could feed those people. It's just we have the food. We just it's not correctly distributed. That work was really looking and saying, well, stuff goes in the bin, and sometimes it goes into the bin at the farm, or sometimes it goes in the bin from a, you know, the back of your fridge, or sometimes that happens at a restaurant, people like, you know, throwing away stuff. And there's nutrition in there and there's flavor in there. And my job working for sort of fancy Michelin-starred restaurants really was to like look at what was being thrown away and say, can we save that? Can we turn that into something delicious? And obviously part of that journey, and part of if you're a cook or a chef or working with food, part of your journey anyway is just to think about flavor. Where does flavor come from? When we cook things, we transform, we create new flavors, we create new textures. And so that journey was around looking in nature and looking in global food systems and saying, like, you know, where is the flavor and what are those flavors? And so that led us on to this idea of like, there are ingredients and foodstuffs that the world loves, for example, chocolate. There are others. And we eat a lot of them. But that flavor profile, you know, what tastes, what makes chocolate taste like chocolate, it's just a bunch of chemical compounds, just in the same way that you eat an apple or you boil an egg. It's just chemical compounds. And with chocolate, let's say there's 100 to 500 different chemical compounds. Well, there's a question then, if you started thinking about flavor and where it comes from and food waste and the sources of these flavor, why not? You know, why can you not create a flavor profile that tastes like chocolate, that just comes from somewhere that's not a cocoa bean? And initially that might just seem like a sort of academic project. Well, that sounds cool and a bit sort of Willy Wonka. But then when you start looking at chocolate, and we can dig into this in a minute, but other products that we're interested in, so coffee and vanilla, you realize that actually, well, the humble cocoa bean sounds all well and good, but actually the manner in which it's produced, by and large, the majority of it for mass market purposes, incurs actually a lot of damage to people and the planet.
I see. And I mean, it does, you're right, it does sound a bit sort of mind-boggling, this talk of cocoa-free chocolate. So I wonder, when it comes to chocolate, what are those problems in the supply chain? And is there a bit of a tension between the fact that, you know, there's an industry here as well, this is people's livelihood, and presumably removing the cocoa kind of takes a little bit away from that. And I just wondered what those trade-offs are.
I think we need to take a little bit of a step back. Obviously, you know, if you look at it on the surface, there could be tension, right? We're threatening potentially to take away a market, but that's not what we're doing. We're actually offering another pillar where we can say, hey, clearly the system is broken right now. The existing supply of cocoa is simply decreasing, and it actually can't meet the growing demand that, you know, people want to eat. And so we need to offer another third pillar to say, okay, if you can't sustain existing growth, and existing demand, how are you expected to meet increasing demand? And so with our product, you know, what we're offering is actually a mass market solution. And so what we're actually offering is a way for farmers to not feel pressured to meet quota, to meet this existing, you know, 400 million tons a year that gets produced, but actually say, hey, let's focus on reinvesting in your farms, getting the output that you need, instead of pressuring them to meet, you know, the rather, you know, mass market and the cheaper quality chocolate that is demanded at this time. I think we need to focus on the fact that what we're offering is not actually threatening to take away from the market at this time. I think a lot of the bigger players have recognized this issue, and they're also looking for ways to, say, solve it. And so they've recognized that we are a piece of the puzzle. We're not necessarily the one-size solution for everything. And that's something we also want to say, is that we are just simply a pillar in the many solutions that are existing to address the issues within the cocoa market.
It's also worth giving listeners a little bit of background around, you know, what that the context of those that supply and demand conversation is. And that's, you know, if you go into a supermarket and you pick up a chocolate bar, you probably think, you know, the average consumer these days might know, well, you know, I know that meat's kind of bad for the planet and there's some dodgy ethics there. And I, when I'm in the dairy aisle, I know that cheese and milk, there's some similar things. But actually, there's a really dark story around chocolate that's been very well or very poorly publicized. But the story is essentially that most of the world's chocolate, about 2/3 of it, it comes from cocoa that's produced in just two quite small countries in West Africa. So that's Ghana and Ivory Coast. And the production of that cocoa, which feeds into all of these mass market products and mass market producers that Aram was just talking about, involves the use of slave labor, involves the use of child labor and even child trafficking. So there's thought to be about 1.5 million child laborers in West Africa. And it also involves widespread deforestation. So something like 80% of Ivory Coast's rainforested area has disappeared since the 1990s. Not all of it, but a large portion of it due to cocoa production. And as a result of that, cocoa has, and chocolate by extension, has a very large carbon footprint. So a carbon footprint that is larger per kilo than things like chicken or cheese or pork. So there's this real sort of horror story that's behind every chocolate bar that you buy in a supermarket, whether it's in Britain or somewhere else in the world, that the average consumer just doesn't know about. So that's also what's underlying. There's all of these supply chain pressures that Aram's just articulated about, you know, increasing demand but decreasing growth. There's also with climate change, increasing risk of diseases, and it's basically becoming more difficult for these hardworking cocoa farmers to produce this crop. And, you know, it goes without saying that a lot of these cocoa farmers are some of the, you know, the poorest people in the world. They're, you know, surviving off under $2 a day. And, you know, they are at the mercy of these supply chain pressures, which are essentially dictated by these basically 10 to 15 very large multinational confectionery companies, which we all know the names of. And they're living in, you know, abject poverty because of this situation with cocoa and the chocolate supply chain.
I mean, as a consumer, you've got me sold because I hate the thought of contributing to all these problems that you've just mentioned. But at the same time, the thought that chocolate supplies are depleting strikes fear into my heart. So I'm on board. But I mean, how do you make cocoa-free chocolate? And I'm sure you've got some of your secrets, but perhaps you could maybe just kind of explain to me in sort of basic terms, how do you make chocolate without cocoa?
Yeah, so I'll do a chocolate 101 first. So when you, if you want to make chocolate, grow some cocoa beans, you ferment the cocoa beans. Lots of people don't know that chocolate's fermented. People then roast those fermented chocolate beans, and then they basically mix them in what looks like a fancy food processor, and they'll throw in some sugar, and they might throw in some extra cocoa butter, or actually, you know, again, if you're in a supermarket aisle, chocolate producers, because cocoa butter is expensive, they add other vegetable oils like palm oil. And obviously there's a whole conversation around, you know, the good and the bad of palm and palm supply chains. So, you know, we love chocolate, and we, you know, we don't we want to see a future where there's more chocolate and better chocolate, and the people that create that chocolate, whether it's farmers to chocolate makers, there's more equity, people are paid more fairly. So we're definitely not anti-chocolate. And because of our love of chocolate, you know, we were inspired by that arc of how you make chocolate. And, you know, we have a saying, it's an Albert Einstein quote, as simple as possible, but not simpler. So we wanted to take that inspiration from how you make chocolate. So we've essentially copied that like arc of how people make chocolate. What we do differently is we start off with something that's not cocoa beans. So again, starting from this, these sort of precepts when Aram and I, you know, met and started this company, it's like there's no point replacing one unsustainable, unethical product if you're just going to go and use another one. So we set ourselves this challenge of using ingredients that are basically, you know, sustainable, environmentally friendly, whatever words you want to use to describe those things, widely abundant. Again, the one of the key issues with cocoa supply chain is that the supply comes from a very small geographically small area. So widely abundant and obviously kind of, you know, inexpensive helps a company be successful. So we're working with cereals and legumes. So, you know, some of our hero ingredients, as we like to call them, are barley and carob. And instead of going through that arc of fermentation, roasting, melanging, we start with other ingredients. And then we've developed, as you say, we can't talk explicitly about it, but an arc of processing that mirrors and echoes and takes inspiration from how chocolate is made.
There you go. And I've heard that fermented foods are good for me, so I'm presuming that's all grand. And what kind of stage are you currently at? Is your product available yet, or do you have kind of a route to market planned out?
Yeah, so we'd actually done a couple limited editions last year, but we're much more focused on, you know, bringing that to the wider public. And so, you know, keep your eyes peeled. You know, later this year we'll be doing larger launches, and then next year we'll be looking to do a retailer launch as well. So we're definitely looking to getting, you know, our cocoa-free chocolate and the latest and greatest into your mouths.
And we're very proud that we're the first company in the world to launch a cocoa-free chocolate in 2022. There's a few other, I mean, they're competitors in some way, but we're all mission aligned, so they're allies in many ways. But we're still very proud that we beat everyone else in various other countries in the world to bring a cocoa-free chocolate to market.
And so you should be. I will say I write about a lot of different businesses in my line of work, and yours is one of the few that I have signed up to the newsletter with my personal email address because I want to know when this is available. So I'll just kind of wrap up by asking sort of what your next steps are. What are the next big milestones and what can we expect to see?
I'll touch on, you know, some of the business milestones, you know, for us to actually bring products to the wider market. You know, logistically, what does that actually mean? It means focusing, doubling down on your operations, scaling up. And so we're very much in that journey, and we're looking to scale up, you know, industrial scale. There are many chocolate producers out there, so we are looking to partner. So if you're listening, actually give us a shout. But yeah, I can also hand over to Johnny because there are also very fun milestones coming up.
I would say, you know, key milestones right now. So we have products, we've sold products, and the feedback is that people love them and they're excited by them, which is obviously what we want to hear. But of course, you know, by and large, we're a group of perfectionists and we want this product to be, you know, as good as possible. So we're hard at work perfecting, changing. The idea, and we haven't mentioned this yet, is that this product that we're, or products we're selling, can be one-for-one replacements for regular chocolate. So yes, chocolate bars, but also, you know, we'll sell things that other people can use to, you know, enrobe an ice cream bar or put, you know, in chocolate chip cookies, etc.
Easter eggs.
Easter eggs, yeah. We actually did the world's first cocoa-free Easter egg this year. We did a competition and someone on Instagram, and so we sent one out to someone. I don't know where they were, but they enjoyed it. So, that, you know, when you look at those different applications, the chocolate that goes into all of those things industrially around the world needs slightly different properties. You know, you need chocolate to be a little bit more runny or a little bit more, you know, fatty, or to be able to be baked at very high temperatures, or to be able to be frozen. So those are all technical challenges. We have a bunch of products, but we're, you know, working with our customers and clients and potential clients to perfect our product for their needs. So that's, you know, some of the milestones is to just make the product better, broaden the scope of applications.
Amazing. Well, I can assure you that I will be following along keenly, and I'm sure many of our listeners will be as well. So thank you again for joining me today. We really appreciate your time. And to our listeners, if you'd like to share your thoughts about what's being discussed today, you can find us on social media or drop us an email at sgvoice@dcthompson.co.uk. That's all for this week, but subscribe to our channel so you never miss an episode. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts, and we'll look forward to seeing you soon.